And now, it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Maxa, Corey Sandin, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best. Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Maxa, and Corey Sandin.
And good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup. I'm Pete Gray with Rock Cod Rick Maxa. We're in the world headquarters of Let's Talk Hookup here right next to the San Diego Landings in Point Loma. And we have a great guest for you. Our good buddy and friend and an expert angler, Greg Stoatsbury, is here. We're going to be talking some fishing. Bet we're going to even sneak in some AFCO stuff and a lot more. You stay tuned. This is Southern California Sport Fishing Voice. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
You've heard all about it. You know the anglers catching fish have it, so what's holding you back? It's a fact. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. You can get daily catch reports from Point Conception to San Martin Island 365 days a year. FishDope.com is for everyone, whether you have your own boat, fish on your friend's boat, or a sport boat. FishDope.com has online planning tools, moon phase, tides, hot bite icons, and more. So bottom line is, if you don't have FishDope.com, well, you're probably missing a lot of bites. Membership costs less than $50 of gas, and that's for the entire year. That's right, 1 year. What a bargain! Plus, use the special code to save $20 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.
When I get back to the dock from a fishing trip, I need to get caught up. And your San Diego County Ford dealers have a perfect solution. The Ford F-150 truck with available interior work surface to put your laptop, paperwork, and more. This is just one of the many useful features Ford has built into this amazing truck. Get behind the wheel of a Ford F-150 truck with an available interior work surface. Visit your San Diego County Ford dealer to learn more. They'll be glad to hook you up.
In America, the future belongs to everyone. So we built the vehicles of the future for everyone. Command the road with built Ford Tough trucks. Gear up and head out in a Ford SUV. Or check out Ford's adventurous new lineup like Bronco, Bronco Sport, and Maverick. Order your perfect truck or SUV built for you by you. Or get big cash back, low APR, and exclusive lease offers at your local Ford stores, where the future is for everyone.
This is Bob Hoos at Costa Sunglasses. Visual signs are a critical part of my fishing program, from bay bass to bluefin. I wear Costas to see what's out there. Costas are built with advanced polarization technology with our 580 lens, designed to cut through the sun's glare while providing enhanced color to see more fish. Costa was founded by a group of anglers wanting a high-performance lens for every fishing application. Costa has a West Coast-style frame and lens for your adventures. CostaSunglasses.com.
It's going to be a great show this morning. Lots of fun having Greg in here. One of my favorite shows of the whole year.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Of course, you're a retired man now, but you spent how many years with AFCO?
I was there 33 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Awesome.
33 years. And, yeah, of course, your lovely wife, Vivian, who's with you today, is still there holding the fort down, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And making sure things get done at AFCO, and we sure appreciate what she does at AFCO for sure. But so what's been going on? What are you doing?
Well, being that I'm retired, I try to wear out boats and pickup trucks as fast as I can.
Boy, yeah. And you kind of cover the gambit, fresh, salt water, everything, right?
Well, Pete, you've known me a long, you guys both know me a long time, and you know that my year kind of revolves around the different seasons and the different fish that I like to target. So I spend 3 months on our offshore boat in the summertime chasing tuna and marlin, and then typically do some bass fishing in the wintertime, and now a lot of duck and goose hunting. Turkey hunting in the spring, trout fishing in the spring, and then Montana in the early summer. to fly fish and go up there and like we did and go up and hang out on the Missouri River and fish that whole front side of the Rockies.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. That's a good schedule, huh?
Yeah.
So last week you were up in the Owens Valley fishing or duck hunting, right?
I was up there duck hunting. Yes. Yeah.
And scenery was great.
It was awesome. I mean, you know, as an angler and a person that loves the Sierra, has been going there forever. Just the fact that to see that much snow falling. And as much snow as there was, we actually tried to hunt Hot Creek. We hunted Hot Creek, but got blown out by the snow and the ice and the 0-degree temperatures. But to see that much snow on the ground up there and that much snow falling up in the mountains and, of course, up at Mammoth and everything is it's nice because it bodes well for the future.
Right.
And they got whacked today and yesterday. Yeah.
That's great. Viv and I were up there in November, and it was bleak. I mean, you couldn't see snow on any mountain at all.
Yeah.
And we even hiked into a couple of backcountry lakes, and there was barely any snow at 10,000 feet.
So. Wow.
And that's so unusual in the Sierras.
Yeah.
But we had a great trip up there, but nice. It started snowing when we were there the first week of November, and I think it's been snowing pretty steady since.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And let's hope it continues because it bodes well for everything, from water to waterfowl to fish and everything else.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We fished up at Bridgeport a couple of days when I was up there and kind of worked our way down through the Sierras, and I've never seen Bridgeport that low.
Yeah.
And the East Walker was very, very low. It, just everything's under a lot of stress. So June Lake's down, I don't know, 10 feet from high water. Grant Lake, you know, there was water from the Narrows on, but that's about it.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, it's...
It's coming back.
It's good to see.
Yeah, let's hope so, yeah. And you had a great summer, too. You did a lot of fishing. You're a member of the Tuna Club and did a lot of tournaments and caught a lot of bluefin. And
we did.
Did some research with Dr. Barbara Block and everything. Tell us about that.
Well, that was kind of the highlight of our summer. You know, we have tried the last few years to plan with Dr. Barbara Block out of Stanford and Monterey there to plan to get her out and get some tuna tagged for her because she wanted to tag some adult bluefin because, of course, they're still trying to figure out why these fish are here, how long they're going to stay, when they split to go over and spawn. They spawn 8,000 miles away.
Yeah.
There's none of them spawn here.
None of them.
So we had been trying to work out a time to take her fishing. So in August, on the Dark of the Moon, Jim Kingsville and I got together with a good friend of ours, Adam Cargill, and his boat owner, Larry Jacinto, and got Barbara to come down and got on Larry's. He's got an 85-foot Jones Goodell called the Castigo. And it was just one of those magic deals. We hit the exact right day, the right moon phase, perfect weather, no people during the middle of the week. And we ended up tagging 15 bluefin tuna.
Ooh, holy mackerel.
We had 13 over 100 and 2 over 200.
Oh.
And we got spot tags in, I think, all of them. And then we got the satellite, the sew-in tags. She put, I think, 7 or 8 of them. She ran out of them.
That's
she put
awesome.
7 or 8 awesome. Of those in fish. But that whole process, bringing those fish on board and flipping them over and putting them in the cradle and watching Dr. Block, you know, get on them and cut them open and put the tag in. And
amazing. And did they all survive, to your knowledge, as far as the tags go?
They do. She said she's confident that all those fish survived. We did have one fish that was a bleeder that was hooked a little bit deep. Uh-huh. Of course, we're using circle hooks and flying fish and mackerel for all of them. We had one fish that was a bleeder that we took, and she took the whole fish up to Stanford, and they did an MRI on it to check on its whole system and everything. And it was very interesting. She basically gave us an onboard PowerPoint presentation about all her research and what she's doing with the bluefin and all that. And then we were lucky enough at our Tuna Club luncheon Thursday, she came down and gave that same full presentation to our membership at our Christmas luncheon up in Long Beach.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So very interesting stuff. But that trip...
What did you learn?
Well, you learn a lot of things. Like these fish are basically residents here now, and in her opinion, the stock in the Eastern Pacific is... I mean, her exact words were nearly fully recovered.
Wow.
That's the upside.
Yeah.
The downside is ICAT is now going to allow more quota for the fleets in Mexico.
Ooh.
And probably the fleet up here. And, you know, I mean, that's a resource, and it's a resource that they want a piece of. So that's a looming challenge that's coming down the road.
Yeah. Down the road, or is it here?
Well, they already increased the quota.
Oh, they did?
Some of the highest numbers ever.
Wow.
So there's going to be a lot more mesh in the water.
Oh, boy.
And... So that's going to create some challenges.
And so for
tuna pens in Mexico and everything?
Not necessarily in reference to the pens, but in reference to the Persane fleet.
Persane fleet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So the big Azteca boats and all the boats you see out there out of San Miguel or wherever, they're going to have a lot more opportunity to be on that fish, which in
on
turn,
the on the California side,
on the Mexico side,
on the Mexico side.
Yeah, and then in California, I think there's a big push for the Persaners to get to some of that fish as well.
Yeah.
So that's what one of the things that she said. She goes, yeah, it's great that this population is nearly fully recovered, but we're also going to have a lot more pressure to share the resource.
Yeah.
So, to me, those things are already so spooky and difficult to get on.
Yeah.
And you start throwing mesh in the water, and then they're going to get really spooky because they hear sonar and motors, and they're going to run.
Well, the best thing for us was the fact that the pen operations pretty much were done in January.
Yes.
The last 2 years.
They fish a couple of weeks at the beginning of the year, and those guys are so effective at catching it that they get full, and that's that.
Yeah. So we can hope maybe they can stretch into February, and then they're done.
Yeah, and that would be nice. But the good news is the resource is in great shape.
That's really good news.
And
it's not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere because it's all about the food.
Yeah.
And she said it's all about the food. One interesting little fact that she threw out, which is kind of obvious, and some might already know it, but she said on the full moon cycle, the tuna go down and feed on squid. On the dark moon cycle, they come up and feed on fin bait, and primarily they want sardines and anchovies, because they're high in oil content. And so it really kind of rang a bell with me to think, you know what, I have to concentrate my efforts around the new moon and not so much around the full moon.
Oh.
Now, the sport fleet that fishes at night and probably is fishing on fish that are feeding on squid, that's okay for them. So the full moon cycle's fine. But just interesting, because I've always been a nut about moon phases for everything I do, whether it's ducks or bass or whatever. But she did make that statement about the bluefin, and said that they can tell that from these tags they put in them. They can tell the time of day they feed. They can tell the depth they're at. They can tell the location. They measure the amount of daylight, and they can do a mathematical calculation and tell by the amount of daylight exactly where the fish is in the Pacific Ocean. They've got an algorithm.
Got an algorithm. That's cool.
Unbelievable.
So a lot of these tags that we put in on the trip that I was on, they have a little stalk that sticks out of the fish. The computer's inside the belly of the fish, and the stalk sticks out, and it measures light. So it measures light every single day, and then they've got an algorithm they plug in that tells them, with that amount of light, where that fish has to be.
Get out of here. That's cool. That's way cool.
So when you say these fish aren't going anywhere, how far will they migrate? I mean, will they just stay right here off of Clemente, or will they go down south, or will they go to Guadalupe, or how far are they ranging?
So that's a great question. And she had a bunch of slides that she put up that showed the fish, the returns that she's had and the tags that she's put out, which is in the hundreds now.
Mm.
I think they did almost 100 fish on the Shogun just after our trip, mostly nighttime fish. But those fish that she showed, they range through the seasons from early in the year down off Mexico, so basically in that Cedros, Bonitos kind of an area,
mm-hmm.
and then and even farther down below to Mag Bay. And then as the season progresses, April, May, June, the stuff is right up off of here, centrally located here. And then as it gets a little later in the year, the stuff's going all the way up to Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
Monterey has become, she calls it a hot spot because of all the upwelling. And so she said they're finding that the bluefin don't really want to leave that Monterey area because there's so much bait and so much upwelling.
Yeah.
And she related a lot of this bluefin being here to the La Nina condition and the fact that we've got so much cold water upwelling, there's so much food, so the whole food chain is going strong, and the bluefin don't get far from the groceries.
Sure. And the La Nina is going to continue, it looks like, into 2023?
She didn't really make any predictions about it, but she did say that was the reason why, the cold upwelling was the reason why we've got this bluefin.
Yeah.
One of the fish that we tagged 3 years ago, the adult fish that Bill Shedd tagged on our boat, was like a 250-pounder. Bill Shedd caught it, and Barbara tagged it, and it had a one-year pop-up on it, and we released it off the west end of San Clemente Island, and exactly 1 year later, our tag popped 80 miles off Monterey.
No kidding. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's going to be very interesting to see with all these fish we tagged on Castigo back in August.
Yeah.
You know, now we've got
a
bunch
of fish. They pop up in a year.
I think most of the pop-up tags she puts on have a one-year duration. Some she can do like 6 months, a year, 2 years. They've got different durations, but I believe all the ones we put on, and these tags are $4,500 a piece.
Wow.
And luckily, CCA and some of the other benefactors that are like AFCO and others invested in a bunch of the tags that she put in these fish.
That's cool.
So they're very, very expensive. That one costs $4,500, and then the internal tag she puts in costs $1,500.
Wow.
So you got a 200-pound bluefin swimming around with $6,000 worth of hardware hanging on.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it gets into, like, if it gets caught, that's kind of a loss, right?
Well, if it gets caught, the satellite tags pop up. And what was interesting is on our trip, while we're at Clemente, she had a tag pop up and wash up on the beach at Little Flower.
Oh,
and
way.
I put her in touch with some contacts I had at the island there, and they were able to recover that tag that came off a bluefin.
They got it off the beach.
They got it off the beach.
That's cool.
And that fish they had tagged, I guess, off Monterey. I think so. That's what
wow.
she told me.
And it was at San Clemente Island.
Wow. Yeah, on the
so
beach.
So the stuff's moving.
It's moving.
Yeah.
But it's basically doing big figure. If you imagine big, long figure eight, that the bottom of it's, you know, basically south of here a couple hundred miles, 300 miles, and the top of it is as high as Oregon.
So backtracking a little bit, now Greg Stotesbury is liking the dark of the moon for bluefin fishing. Is that right?
Well, I've always liked the dark moon phase anyway, but that's, according to her, if you want to fish for fish with fin bait, that the dark of the moon is when you want to be out
fin
there.
Fin bait would be basically kite fishing or trolling or whatever.
Flyers, sardines.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
But
up on the surface.
But she claims, you know, she calls it the era of the giants, because these fish are growing.
That's
and
so cool.
We're having so many of them. And then, of course, eventually they get big enough that they go across the Pacific to Taiwan and Japan, and they spawn. And that's what she's primarily trying to determine through all this tagging. So it's.
And then what happens to them?
Well, hopefully they don't get caught, but there's a lot of pressure over there to catch them. Anyways, sure. You know, they had a couple of 700-pound fish recovered
over there.
The problem she's got is when the fish take across the ocean and they go to the spawning area, a lot of times when the Taiwanese fleet and the Japanese fleet recaptures them, they don't return the tags.
Oh, sure.
So they've had a few returns, but not enough. So that's why all this effort to get more tags and fish. And I guess she's been running an education program over there to try to get as much info back as she can.
Just so they know what's going on.
Super interesting stuff. Yeah. If you could ever get Barbara to come on the show and talk, I mean, she's got so much fantastic information.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. Yeah, I have to work on that.
Yeah,
sure. So one of your other favorite places to go is Pyramid Lake
in
Nevada. And that's become, I mean, you read Western Out There News, and it seems like every week.
Yeah, every other cover, somebody holding a big cutthroat.
Bill Barney has it in his calendar in 2023 and the whole thing. It's like, it's kind of the secret is out, right?
It is. I mean, it's no secret. I mean, I was there opening day this year, which was October 1st. And there were 300 boats in line.
300 boats.
Yeah, on a three-lane launch ramp.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And the only launch ramp on the lake. And it was a sight to see. I mean, I'm talking, I call them trout boats. You know, the big, giant aluminum, two outboards, a kicker motor, radar, enclosed house, three down or four downriggers. There was dozens of that kind of boat up
there. Really?
No kidding.
Yeah. And then we pulled my little center console up there, and we were there the day before. And got in line early and got on the lake and primarily fly fished, you know, pulling streamers on sinking lines, and had phenomenal fishing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable fishing.
Fish up to what?
My big fish was 18.3.
18.3.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big fish in that lake.
We caught more fish that were 8 to 12 pounds than we did fish under 8 pounds.
Wow.
And I think we caught 240 fish in it.
Oh, my God.
We came home because both my buddy and I, John Whitaker, that I was with, our forearms and our hands were cramped.
We're done.
Well, you're pulling on a 9-foot fly rod.
Yeah, right.
And most of the fish are, you know, 10 pounds plus. And, we're just worn out. We're done.
That's so
it's like
rad.
Being on a long-range boat. Yeah. You know, you just can't pull anymore.
Yeah, no moss. But Pyramid can also be a very dangerous, hazardous place to go, too. It's super cold, especially this time of the year in the winter and the spring and stuff. It's the coldest I've ever been in my life, and I've been in some cold environments, and that there's no colder place than standing in the lake at Pyramid.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
And Pete, you know all the different places we've been and fished and had our boats and everything. That place scares me more than any body of water I've ever been. Worse than Baja, worse than Lake Isabella or Cray in a big blow. Pyramid is serious business.
Yeah.
And people die up there.
Yeah.
And boats sink.
Yeah.
And people get caught 20 miles downstream in 30 knot winds, and you know, and it's 15 degrees. And what do you do? You know, it's no lee. I mean, the lake is just a big oval, and it sits north and south, and you see the wind line coming, and you're 20 miles from a launch ramp. And by the way, the launch ramp has no protection.
Yeah.
There's no wave protection.
So even when you get there,
Yeah, you could be pulling your boat out in 2 foot surf.
Jeez. Yeah.
Or bigger.
Yeah.
So it's that part of it is that's why, yeah, Pyramid sounds really cool and great and everything, but it's not the Santa Ana River Lake.
No, you've got to have some, you have to have some knowledge.
Yeah, it's a scary
especially
spot.
If you're going to put a boat or a float tube or a kayak on.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Standing on a ladder, you can get pretty well. You know, it's like you're in knee deep or thigh deep water, but
yeah,
but not on a boat.
Not on a boat. And, you know, unfortunately, in the wintertime, my experience, most of it takes place in the south where the river comes in.
Oh.
And so you're 20 miles downwind to the launch ramp.
Jeez.
So it's a gnarly spot, but the rewards are heavy.
Yeah. Big fish don't come easy.
That's it. Well, we've just brushed the surface of what Greg is doing in his retirement here. We have a lot more to talk about, and I got a fun show for you.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we want to hear from you. If you want to join us and be a part of Let's Talk Hookup this morning, give us a call at 213-432-1090. Again, 213-432-1090. That's how you reach us this morning, or send us a text. Hugely popular to Let's Talk Hookup, the text the show option. That's only available through the Let's Hook Up app, which is a free download if you don't have it already. Great way to listen to the show, keep in touch with what's going on, and an opportunity for you to text in a quick Greg morning. Also giving away a killer prize today. So if you do send us a text, make sure you include your contact info. So if you're the big winner at the end of the show, we'll be able to get back to you. Basically, we take one potential winner from all the phone calls, one potential winner from all the texts. Greg's going to flip a coin at the end of the show, designate who wins, the caller or the texter, and somebody's getting an awesome AFTCO prize package that includes a brand new AFTCO soft-sided tackle bag, two spools of the Psycho Pro Fluorocarbon, and the circuit breaker Ikejime wire, plus a Bill Varney 2023 calendar. So an awesome prize pack for one of our lucky callers or texters at the end of the show today. Again, if you want to get through, it's 213-432-1090. And when we come back, we're going to be taking your phone calls. Lots of info coming your way. You stay tuned. You're listening to Southern California's Sport Fishing Voice. This is Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Captain Dwayne Diego, 4-pack charter captain, here to talk to you about park boats and the good folks at West Coast Marine. When it came time to start Pinnacle Sport Fishing and get my own boat, there was only one choice. I wanted a Parker, and there's a real good reason for it. The fishability and seaworthiness. I've been fishing on parks for years now, and I know the abuse they can take. Park Marine builds a heavy-duty, industrial-strength boat, probably overbuilt, but that's what I need when we're out 12 hours a day, over 300 days a year, running charters. The guys at West Coast Marine built me one heck of a fish boat. From the custom power steering, throttle controls, to the bait pump system, my Parker 2520 XLD will deliver me to the fishing grounds reliably and safe. Take it from me. If you're ready for a new Parker at a fair upfront on a steal, you need to see West Coast Marine, located at 1555 Newport Boulevard in Costa Mesa. Or check them out and their inventory and information online at westcoastmarine.com.
The name that stands out among anglers is Fisherman's Landing, your top choice in local and long-range fishing. Hi, this is Doug Kern. Our hard-working crew will make sure your fishing experience is one to remember. We offer the finest open party trips from 1 to 3 days, the best charter boats available, and of course, our world-renowned long-range fleet is second to none. Fisherman's Landing is a full-service operation offering half-day trips on the Dolphin and full-day open party trips on the spacious and comfortable Liberty. Since we entered the full Fisherman's Landing, the 85 foot Liberty has become a favorite among full-day operations with bump your comfort, huge bait capacity, and RSW fish holds to keep your catch fresh. Plus, Liberty has a big modern galley and two interior heads with showers. All our open party trips from half-day, full, or 1 to 3 day trips can easily be booked online at fishermanslanding.com or give us a call at 619-221-8500. I'll see you at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
For your next fishing adventure, check Point Loma Sport Fishing. They offer half-day trips on the Daily Double and full trips on the Mission Bell every day. Perfect for novice or seasoned fishermen. Point Loma Sport Fishing also offers overnight to multi-day trips on the American Angler, Vagabond, Intrepid, Independence, ULOAN, T-Bird, Game Changer, and more. Visit PointLomaSportFishing.com where you can purchase tickets online. Want to go fishing? Point Loma Sport Fishing has you covered.
Swordfish season is on, and now is the time to get your gear. Hi, this is Doug Kern from Fisherman's Landing Tackle, the saltwater tackle professionals. Daiwa has been making great saltwater reels for decades, and their lineup of electric reels are fantastic. The Daiwa Seaborg, with its mega torque motor, has the power to bring in that giant swordfish. And when it comes to flying a kite, the Daiwa Tanacom is the answer, and so affordable. Both Daiwa reels are in stock now at Fisherman's Landing Tackle. Visit us at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a great time here this morning. Phones are packing up. If you want to get your chance to talk to Greg, give us a call at 213-432-1090.
Yeah, we're having a great time with Greg. Talk some fishing here, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Phones are packing up. Got a great text here. And you know, Greg being the guy that he, you know, he's got to have a lot of toys, and he's been in the business for a long, long time. Knows a lot about tackle, too. So this is a text from Corey Escondido, and he says, good morning. Getting my questions ready early for Greg. Looking for an affordable spinning rod to mix with a Shimano Baitrunner 6000 to use inshore slow-pitch jigging with jigs 100 of 100 grams. Kind of like maybe a Colt Sniper or something like that, or a current Sniper, as they call them now. Can I please get a jigging rod recommendation, and how would you recommend setting up that reel and line?
Well, the specific rod, I can't name for him the specific rod model because I just don't have that info in front of me. Sure. But I do know that we've got on my boat, we have several Shimano spinning rods. And I think they're, I want to say Talus.
It could be.
I think they're Talus spinning rods. And we like the stuff that's a little longer rather than shorter. I think they're 7.2 Talus medium heavies. And we've got a 10,000 size reel on those spooled with small diameter 80-pound Spectra to an AFCO Psycho Pro wind on, and that's kind of our rig. And generally when I'm fishing with some stuff on the spinning gear, we've got an 80-pound wind on there. I think that answers what he's asking.
Yeah, I think so.
If you were looking for that slow pitch jig in a rockfish or yellowtail or something like that, and affordable in spinning gear means a lot of different things. You know, an affordable spinning rod and a bait runner could be, you know, half-day fishing and catching calico bass and wanting an inexpensive rod, you know, that's under $100. Or, you know, in the world, spinning tackle with Stella's and pluggers, I mean, those outfits can be, you know, multiple thousands of dollars. A rod that I really like from Shimano that is a jigging-specific line is called the Grapple Series. They're not cheap, but in the world of those high-end jigging-specific blanks, they're extremely affordable. They're like in the high $200 to low $300 range. Not a cheap rod, but cheap in comparison to the $600 and $700 models that they're similar to. Like Shimano does with a lot of things, it's like the Torium to the Trinidad or the Speedmaster to the Talica. Grappler is a high-end series that's not crazy expensive like those Osteas and pluggers and those things. And they have some slow-pitch specific models that you might, you know, worth looking at. That cost might be higher than you're after on this outfit, but you know, might be a very weird.
And then it comes in a spinning style too.
Yeah.
So either
that's like my favorite spinning rod for somebody that's really hoping to catch. You know, they also make the slow pitch jigging one would be different, more parallel, kind of short. But they also make some nice longer rods, 8-foot rods that are really good lure casting, stick bait, popper. If you're wanting to catch a fish that's maybe in excess of 100 pounds. I really like those. For not spending tremendous amounts of money, it's a really nice rod.
So this would be more like for fishing like a flat fall or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. We use that spinning gear a lot on boat, and we've landed some really big fish on it. I'm not really so up to speed on the slow pitch thing. It's not really our realm of what we do.
Yeah.
But we use the spinning gear a lot fishing bluefin and have caught some good fish on it.
No kidding. Yeah. Like what are you using? Live bait?
No, mostly using a jig of some kind.
Just some kind of a jig.
Yeah, we're using a jig, and we usually modify the hooks and put like hooks on I'm not remembering
like a
200 gram Colt Sniper, current Sniper, whatever they call it now. We're using that with a couple of assist hooks on it and fire it into foaming,
sure.
Just dropping it down. And I tell you what, we got no problem landing big fish on spinning gear.
And there is no denying the ease and accuracy of casting that at a spot that's coming up. There's buck fever to worry about. And second cast is what you get really out of spinning gear. I always say the same thing, especially when it was popper or stick bait type fishing. It's so often a lure that you can cast fine in the first cast, but trying to watch the fish and manipulate the rod and stack your line right and stack your line tight for your follow-up cast, like, those ones always get, you know, they always get muffed, like, every time.
Yeah.
And a spinning reel is going to give you the follow-up second and third cast at a spot of fish clean every time.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Greg, but I think you can work a pop. I can work a popper better on a spinning reel than I can on a,
no question.
On a conventional reel.
We don't ever throw a popper on anything but spinning gear.
With spinning gear.
And we don't do a ton of that, but when we do it, it's always on spinning gear.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem we have is just getting flossed off. I mean, just so often. The percentage is so low because you throw in a foamer, you hang a fish, and he goes ripping through the school, you know, a fin.
Two other ones go sideways on the line.
Yeah, and you just get flossed off so much.
Yeah.
I think we're about 30% when it comes to that.
Is that right?
Yeah, we just get, you get chopped.
Yeah.
You get cut off. So when the fish finally breaks from the school and gets out in the open, you're like, oh,
you're
thank
okay.
God, we might land him.
Yeah, sure. Phones are packed. Let's jump into it, Rick.
How about we start this morning with Benjamin? He's calling us from Carlsbad this morning. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You guys, great show again. When you're bringing up these fish to tag, you got to bring them up kind of gingerly, because if you bring them up green, I would expect it's pretty hard to tag them. And then the other thing is, will a bluefin fight to death?
Good question.
Yeah, those are great questions. So Benjamin, you'd be surprised that the technique we use to land these fish and Barbara's team used to land these fish is we use fairly heavier and heavy tackle, 100-pound tackle, land the fish as quick as we can, absolutely as quickly as we could get it to the boat. And then they would get a hold of the leader down on the swim step. This boat that we fished on, this 85-foot Jones Goodell, had a big swim step with a rack. So it had a railing on the swim step and tuna door. And these two young guys that were part of her team, Robbie Schallert and I not remember the other guy's name, were down on the swim step wrangling these tuna on 200-pound leader.
Wow.
And believe me, these things were green.
That's fantastic.
It had a big cradle. They had a 6-foot-long vinyl cradle with poles at each end. And they would actually, once they leadered the tuna, they would steer him into this cradle. And believe it or not, it's hard to imagine, they would get him in the cradle, get one guy on each end, and then they would pass the cradle up onto the boat where we were on the deck, and we'd lay him in a foam cradle, flip the fish over, put a hose in their mouth, put a towel over their eyes, and the fish literally goes to sleep.
No kidding.
Wow.
They just lay there. And this cradle, if you can imagine, it's portable. It's like an air mattress.
Uh-huh.
So the fish is there. Barb does her work, and she sews that tag in less than 5 minutes.
Wow.
Takes her no time at all. And then puts the tags in his back. We take the hose out of the mouth. We spin the cradle to the tuna door. And then three of us, or four, walk the cradle out the door and tilt it. And the tuna slides out of there, hits the water. And you watch him in the water. He'll go about, I'm going to say, 30, 40 feet and not do anything.
So
and then all of a sudden,
at this point, you're thinking, oh, this thing's dead.
Yeah,
the first one.
Like, he looks like he's headed to the bottom. It's a mutt.
Yeah.
But their tail starts kicking, they recover their oxygen, and off they go.
Wow.
And the percentage of the mortalities are super minimal. She knows that because she's got tags in
tag it.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That's exact. Can she actually track with these tags? I mean, a live tag?
No.
It's only when it pops up.
It's all satellite upload.
Yeah.
So when it pops up, it uploads all of its data from the past year or whatever the duration is. It uploads all the data. And can the fish fight to the death? Yeah. We had one of the 15 fish we caught was hooked a little deep and, you know, came up with smoke coming out of its gills, and we got it on the deck. It was done. She didn't put a tag in it. She was super careful about the condition, but, you know, one fish out of 15 when you're talking to...
That's awesome.
I think our big fish taped at 225, and we only had one mortality, so I thought that was pretty darn good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a day of fishing. That was in one day?
That was in one day.
And holy mackerel.
And the non...
Day.
Yeah, no, the non-satellite pop-up tags, it's required that somebody then turn that fish back in.
Yeah, for her to get the data off the computer on the sew-in tag,
right.
They've got to get that tag back.
Somebody's got to catch it, recover the tag, get it back to her.
And that's been the big challenge because, number one, you got to get that fish back. This is an interesting thing. I think she told us that of the fish she's tagged, 53% return over the years.
Of the tags
in
general.
Period.
In general.
Yeah, 53, which is pretty incredible.
Is that good?
Well, it's good and bad.
Are you talking about the pop-ups or just the actual just the regular tags?
All the tags.
All the tags.
Well, yeah. Then so it means a lot of those fish are getting re-caught.
Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting number.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to botch the percentages, but I know that it was struck me as super high.
Pretty high.
Fish back. Yeah.
All right. Very good.
That's great.
All right. Some good texts coming through. Some good phone calls coming through. Let's go ahead and jump back into it, Rick.
You got it. We're going to jump back into the phones and talk to Chuck. He's calling us from Dana Point this morning. Good morning, Chuck. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Hey, great morning. It's raining, but we got a great show to listen to. What information. You know, these things, does she add anything on the miles per hour? These things, these big fish can swim. I've heard on Discovery Channel that they're like 50 plus miles an hour. So I tell people they could eat at Tanner Bank and be at San Clemente by nightfall. So, you know, that's how fast they move. It's just amazing. Did she say anything about how fast they are?
I don't recall her saying she might have. The fish will easily move 40 miles in a day. No problem at all. I mean, they can be from here to there in no time at all. And I do know that she had some video. It was super interesting. They had a camera that they mounted on a fish facing backwards. So imagine a little GoPro camera that was mounted on the back of the fish by the second dorsal, pointing at the tail, and you'd be amazed at how much these fish glide.
I can see
that. They'll kick two or three times, and then they glide. Then they'll kick a couple times, and then glide. And so they'll recover energy, and then they beat their tail and recover ground. But specifically as far as speed, I don't recall her saying. She might have said, but I don't. I just remember her saying that they can make a 40, 50-mile move, no problem,
pretty
in
quickly.
24 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
There's been plenty of times when you'd see a big breezer of just super lazy ones with their fin or tail are out of the water, and they're just doing next to nothing, and then you make the approach wrong, or your lure, when it hits, they didn't like what they saw, and like you'd be amazed at how quickly a giant ball of those things can just be gliding with no effort, can just, in one snap of a finger, they are gone.
Like, yeah.
They can turn the motor on real fast.
Yeah, and I guess right now the Navy's doing a bunch of studies, and they're designing drones that look like a bluefin tuna.
What?
Get out of here. Based on all the physiology that she's got. I mean, she had a whole bunch of information on that was super interesting.
That
but
is
it was
cool.
In amongst other things. But, yeah, they're, you know, how the fins fold in and how the fish paddle the water and the little finlets in the back, what those things do to break up the turbulence and cavitation. And it was just amazing stuff.
Oh, I can just see it now. Look like, oh, there's a breezer. No, it's a drone. Hey, a great text from Darren Menifee here. He says, I'm a private boater who's learned a lot keeping my catch fresher on the boat. My next two steps is to use the Ikijimi wire from AFCO and the slurry in the fish box. What is your recommend as a private boater slurry recipe? Is there extra salt? Thanks. Going rock fishing soon before the season ends.
No, I don't add salt personally in our, you know, because we bought our fish in the bag. What I will do is put, you know, my recipe is 10-1, so, you know, it, at least 20 pounds of ice for, you know, for a fish that we put in there, and 20 to 40 pounds of ice, and we'll put a bag ice in there, and then dump a couple of 5-gallon buckets of salt water in it, and then put the fish in.
Have you mastered the AFCO Ikijimi wire?
No.
You haven't yet?
I'm not.
All right. You got to get a lesson from Robbie then, huh?
Yeah, I got to get a lesson from Robbie on that because we didn't do it. And, I mean, we don't seem to have any problem with quality of our fillet. I mean, I'm pretty crazy about how I handle the fish and how we ice it and clean it and everything. But no, I have not used the Ikijimi, to be honest. I haven't tried it yet.
What is the process on the flying fish? Like when a big fish comes up to the gaff, what happens after that?
So once we get the fish on the deck, of course, we're careful about the gaff shot and we never drop the fish on the deck. We're real careful to set the fish down, on the deck. And then, typically we'll hit the fish in the head with a bat to stun it and slow it down. And then, as we do that, while the fish is still pretty fresh and maybe still a little bit lively, we will take a knife and stick it behind the pec fin and cut the main bleeder artery that I forget what they call it, but it runs down the lateral line. So we'll cut that on each side. And then what I've been doing lately is I've been tail roping the fish, lifting the fish back over, putting it in the water and let it bleed out in the water. And then we bring it back in. I typically take the head off, take the guts all out, and then put it in the slurry.
How long do you let them do their thing over the side of the boat?
till it looks like there's no smoke coming out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once there's no blood coming out, and you know, a reasonable amount of time, not too long.
Yeah.
And you know, it gets difficult. The fish is 250 pounds. It's
sure.
not so easy to do, but it does give you a lot better product at the end when you get as much of the blood out as possible. The other key thing that we do when we
so you don't cut a gill, you cut it behind the peck.
I just poke it behind the peck, and that main artery will pump all the blood out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for us, that seems to work the best.
Yeah.
The main thing we do when we clean the fish and we fine cut the fish, we don't use any water. It's all paper towels and into the bag.
Yeah.
So we don't introduce any liquid at all. And then when we freeze the fish, if we have to freeze it or when we store it, I put those AFCO diapers that they make
right.
for the
mm-hmm.
fish to absorb all the liquid. I think that liquid is what potentially gives your fish a bad flavor.
Absolutely. No question about it.
So I
and those AFCO diapers are great because they suck all that moisture out of the fish.
Yes. And then yeah. Before we ever cook it or anything, I dry it off with paper towels.
Yeah.
And I'm just super careful to keep let no water get on the fish.
I'm sure they're stoked about you guys calling them diapers, you know.
I know there's a technical name, but I'm not a company
about it. I think they just call them absorbent fish pads.
Absorbent fish pads.
Okay.
Well, you know,
you throw out that AFCO diaper, it's perfect.
You're right, they're awesome.
Yeah, but don't put them on Wyatt, okay?
Yeah, got that button. Like, in a pinch, man.
You never know. You have some home.
Sew that thing up.
You know, speaking of AFCO, one of the things that you were instrumental before you retired from AFCO was putting together cyclofluorocarbon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about that, how you developed cyclofluorocarbon.
Well,
I love that stuff.
Good stuff.
A project kind of, you know, of course, we were always searching for new product and new things to get into the marketplace and all that, and it really kind of stayed out of terminal tackle. We were a rod parts company for so many years, and then of course the clothing came in, and then in the search for new things to get into, being a bass fisherman, I was pretty aware of the Sunline Corporation and the quality of the product that they make. That's a Japanese line, was the number one fluorocarbon manufacturer in Japan, but not so well known here other than in the bass market. And so when we decided that we would do leader material, and we looked at the leaders in the industry, and everyone knows who those are, you know, the different labels that are out there. We thought, you know, what can we do? How do we go about manufacturing that? So Casey Shedd and I flew over to Japan and spent a week over there at the factory at Sunline and developed our own numbers, our own diameters, our own tensile strengths, elongation, abrasion resistance, all the different properties we wanted in leader material. We had the good people at Sunline develop for us. We made our own custom formula line.
Wow.
This is not an off-shelf. Anybody else can get a type of fluorocarbon.
You didn't just put your name on something that they already produced.
We absolutely did not want to do that because we had certain requirements that
just
didn't fit with what they had. And so we spent a week over there and a lot of time in the lab and in their development area and extruding different lines and testing them and developed this line with the Sunline Corporation. And then just before I left AFCO, we came out with the Cyco Leader, which, of course, I use it on the boat, and we've caught tons of fish on it now. And in my opinion, you know, it's the best fluorocarbon I've ever used.
How is it different?
I think the main thing about it is tensile strength is super high.
Mm-hmm.
It knots cramps really consistently. You don't have to worry about it burning on itself or whatever. But it's the abrasion strength that I've found to be tremendous. So when you get a bunch of scratches in it from teeth or from whatever, or rubbing on the hull of the boat, whatever happens that wears your line down, going over rocks or kelp, the stuff maintains more strength after abrasion than any leader material I've ever used.
Oh.
By far. I mean, not even close. One of the leader materials, as they get abraded or you bust the coating off of them, they degrade super quick.
Uh-huh.
Cyclofluorocarbon, I can tell you story after story of big fish that we've had people in long fights and the lines chafe way, way down, and we still get the fish. We just haven't chafed off a lot of fish.
Are you a clear or a pink guy?
So I really don't think it makes a lot of difference, but for tuna, I'm pink.
Pink?
Yeah.
Okay.
For billfish and everything else, clear is fine.
Okay.
Freshwater, it's all clear.
Clear.
But I do think that a tuna's eye, for whatever
especially
reason,
a bluefin's
eye just does not see the pink as well, in my opinion.
Interesting.
I really like that it stays so crystal clear and gets really good longevity. Like a fish in Guadalupe, I like a pretty darn short piece of line. And some of the other ones, after you fish it pretty good and you stretch it and you cut a couple of big ones and you pull real hard, a lot of them turn that kind of milky,
chalky,
hazy. Exactly.
Yeah.
And man, you can't recreate that in that. And like no matter how much you stretch that stuff out, it stays crystal, crystal, crystal clear. That's my favorite part about it. I really like that line.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good job, Greg.
Not me. It was a company. Yeah.
Hey, when we come back, we got a lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way, including a big block of your phone calls and the catch report. We're going to find out what's biting up and down the beach. You stay tuned. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
This is Art Taylor of The Searcher. Celia, Team Searcher, and I would like to thank all of our loyal customers for their support for the past 40 years. The Searcher has air-conditioned cabins, an RSW system to preserve your catch, a fantastic crew, and awesome food. If you are looking for a great fishing adventure, our 2023 schedule is available online now at SearcherSportFishing.com. Call Celia or Aaron in the office at 619-226-2403. That's 619-226-2403.
When it comes to fishing rods for saltwater, there's just one name you need to know, Calstar. Take, for example, the Graphiter series. It's a true graphite and fiberglass composite rod, the finest that's ever been built. And for anglers seeking traditional performance, durability, and quality at an affordable price, the Calstar West Coast series of rods are the ones for you. Their master craftsmen bring decades of rod building experience to every rod they make. So if you want your fishing rods to be truly state-of-the-art, I always recommend Calstar at fine tackle stores everywhere.
Hey, it's time to talk about great gear from Shimano. And I got to tell you, with Greg here being in his background, we got to talk about Trenx and his bass fishing and all that kind of stuff. Trenx is just an amazing reel, right, Greg?
I love that thing. That's my favorite all-time reel for throwing all kinds of stuff with braided line on long rods.
Yeah, for sure. And what's your favorite one? 200, 400,
you know, for my freshwater,
500?
My freshwater stuff throwing swim baits, I love the 300.
Yeah.
And in the saltwater for throwing the iron, I'm using the 500 with 80-pound Max Quattro braid on it.
Yeah. And it's just absolutely the power of that Trenx reel. Doesn't even compare to anything else. It's not even fair.
Yeah, no, the drag and everything on it. And I just like the ergonomics of it. Like all Shimano stuff, the ergonomics are so good. It fits in your hand so well. It's so easy to, you spend the whole day chucking a big swim bait or firing a Taddy 45 with that stuff. It's easy to keep that reel in your hand. It's easy to wind with, and I love it.
The Trenx reels, it's a great lineup from fresh and saltwater from Shimano.
Hayden Lane here from Fast Lane Kayaking, and I got to tell you about all rad new stuff we have in the shop, like a fully updated line of Hobie inflatable kayaks, the iTrek series. Hobie took the best-selling i11S and made it even better, then added new models like it, like the new iTrek 9 that weighs just 37 pounds, fully rigged, packs into a small bag with wheels, and fits just about anywhere. And on the water, this thing performs. Featuring a super wide and flat hull shape that is stable and an elevated beach chair style seat that is comfortable. Or the all new Hobie Mirage Lynx. Inspired by the shape of the inflatable kayaks, Hobie made a durable and ultralight hardtop model. It's the missing link. It looks like a hybrid of a stand-up board and a kayak. And at just 45 pounds, the hull weighs about half as much as similar size kayaks. And it's stackable. Pull them up on your roof rack or your truck bed. You gotta see this thing. Stop by the shop. Right on the water in Dana Landing Marina in Mission Bay. Or check us out online at FastLaneKayaking.com.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a great time here this morning, talking fishing, talking fun with Greg. Lots of great stuff going on this morning. And as for our friends at Gamakatsu, it's not just hooks that make anglers wild about Gamakatsu. The finest split and solid rings are also made by Gamakatsu. And if you're looking for quality swivels, Gamakatsu makes the best. And when it comes to assist hooks, Gamakatsu has got you covered there, too, with a wide assortment of sizes and styles. See your local dealer or check Gamakatsu.com. We're going to start off up at Dana War Sport Fishing. Talk to the man, Captain Brian Woolley's on the line. What's up, Woolley?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you all this morning?
Doing great. Good morning.
Good, man. A little wet, huh? A little soggy.
It hasn't got to us yet.
Yeah. We are dry down here, but I guess it's coming, right?
But it sure doesn't look nice out that window.
It's coming. Yeah, it's coming. I was at the boat this morning throwing a couple extra lines on there, and it was wet for sure. But, man, what a change in weather, huh? It was like T-shirt weather yesterday, and here we are with this today. So we'll let this kind of spin its way out of here, and we'll get back after it this week. But this week for us, you know, we didn't get boats out every single day this week, but the days that we were able to get the boat off the dock, you know, we had good fishing on both our half and three-quarter day runs. Half-day fishing right now, just more fun sheephead fishing in the shallows in there, along with some bass, some kelp bass and some sand bass. Our water temps, 58 to 60. It'll be interesting to see what happens after this kind of spins out. But that was kind of helpful with that bass. But, again, the clams, the shrimp, the strip mackerel, like we kind of talked about last week, Ricky, caught some nice sheephead. And then on the bass front, there's still some guys, you know, those hardcore guys throwing those artificial lures that are just slowly rolling that across the bottom. Some fluke lures and some smaller swim baits and catching some stuff like that on those rubber lures. And then on the three-quarter day right now, you know, we're still targeting that shallow water rockfish. Kind of more of the same, kind of how it has been for the last, couple months. Those guys fishing those current sniper jigs are having good shots at that. Picasso and those reds are suspended up there off the bottom. Lighter tackle, you know, that gives you a good way to approach that fish. And then the guys fishing the sinker setups with the dropper loop baits, catching some nice sculpin and whitefish, which is good to see that sculpin again, still more and more kind of pushing in on that hard bottom. So as we push through the month of December here, where things are looking like we'll have a good shot at some of that sculpin here come January. And that was pretty much our week. Just a reminder that kids fish free all December with two paid adult fares. So make those plans. I know school's out here in the next week or two with pay. So make some plans to come get on the water before, you know, the rockfish closes. And while the kids are out, come capitalize on this deal here. So call our landing, our number, 949-496-5794. You can link us there through the Left Hawk Hookup page, or you can hit us directly at ganawalk.com.
Awesome. Willie, certainly some great fishing to be had. And, you know, like you say, we're just batting down, let this little weather get by us, get right back on the bite again. If somebody wants to take advantage of the two-for-ones and all the great stuff going on at Dana, one more time, shoot us the phone number, how we reach you.
Roger. Number here, 949-496-5794, ganawalk.com.
Right on. Great job, Willie, as always. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. Have a great week. See ya.
Thanks, Willie.
While we're waiting for Gundy, let's jump in the phones.
All right. Well, I wanted to read a text.
Oh, you got a good text?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's a good text, but it's one of those things that I know is on a lot of mind, and there's not a better opinion than we'd probably like for Greg. At least that was the opinion. Harry from Carlsbad says, hi, guys. I know. What about the A word? I really appreciate Greg's opinion on these things. What's the research say about albacore? When and where? That's from Larry in Carlsbad.
So Barbara was asked that question directly at our Tuna Club luncheon Thursday, which she attended and gave her talk at. And she had no opinion.
Okay.
Really? She said those things are living way north right now because there's so much bait up there. Mm-hmm. And as far as when they're going to be back here, I mean, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense with La Nina and with cold water and all the upwelling. You'd think we'd have albacore.
They'd be thick here. Yeah.
And they are thick. But they're not thick here. 600 miles from here.
Yeah. It was a really good year for the guys that fished them. You know, most of those guys made their way back home in the last, you know, few weeks or last month or so, and it was good fishing. I mean, yeah. At least our group of guys from San Diego that went up there, they all had good seasons, and price was good, and fishing was good.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have direct connect with JJ's kid working in the shop.
Dylan,
with you, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And Aaron Barnhill was in the shop just a couple days ago.
Okay.
We got to talk to all those guys. So anyway, I mean, it was a great year for them. The stock is super healthy, and the fish was close to the beach. Like, everything about it was good, but
they're just not
that's
here.
Just where that's where they live.
That's right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just smiled when the guy asked.
I'll bet.
I don't have any idea.
Nope.
I got nothing.
I don't think anybody has any idea, right? Other than the albacore, maybe, right? And they probably don't even know. Another good text here from Brian in Carlsbad. He says, how do you use the APCO? We're not going to call that. We're not going to call it the D word. We're going to call it the
absorbent
pad. Thank you very much. We want to get kind of get that out of there because Casey might get mad at us.
So soup.
But can you put it and vacuum seal and freeze it with the absorbent pad?
That's exactly what I do.
Yeah, really? Okay.
I use them by the bundle, and because I've got a little connection where I'm able to
get them. Oh, do you? Yeah, you know somebody?
so I'll put them right in the Ziploc bag when we clean the fish on the boat, because we'll Ziploc each loin, uh-huh. You know, each piece of loin in a gallon Ziploc. I'll put one in then, and then when I get it home, dry it off with a paper towel, get all the liquid off it that might be left in there, and then when I vacuum seal it, if we vacuum seal it, I put one of those pads in, put the fillet on top of it, and then we vacuum seal it, and it's good to go. And just leave it like that in the freezer.
Just right that.
And you'd be amazed how much liquid, even when you dry it, and even when it's already been on one of those, there's more liquid comes out.
Well, you know what Sean from Fisherman's Processing always says? When you're defrosting a piece of tuna or a piece of fish from a vacuum seal bag, take it out of the bag and then wrap it in paper towels and let it thaw in your refrigerator. And I do that, and it's amazing how much liquid comes out of that.
Yeah.
Now, if you use the APCO absorbent pad, it'd probably be even better just because there's more absorption there.
Yeah, we used a ton of them this last summer, and we did kill a few fish, and they worked great. I mean, they kept that.
It sucks off, and the fish won't smell fishy, and it'll actually taste like it was fresh. It's just like not even frozen.
Yeah, you just eliminate that oxidation of the blood in that liquid.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty impressive for sure. All right. Hey, let's go ahead and jump back on the phone.
You got it. This time we're going to talk to Kevin. He's calling us from Orange County this morning. If you want to get through, give us a call this morning. We do have one open phone line. That's 213-432-1090. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Big fan. Listen, I was calling. I came out here in 88, and so I was an avid bass fisherman, freshwater, until I took a boat to San Clemente. And, of course, tugging on a six-pound, bass in the ocean is vastly different than a 10-pounder in freshwater. So I was hooked. Yellowtail fishing hooked me, and then white sea bass. First question, what's the state of the white sea bass population, like off of San Clemente, et cetera? And then another thing is, I remember when I first came out here in 88, 89, we used to take a day boat down, like 42-mile mark, 60-mile mark, just to fish for a couple of hours for bluefin or whatever, and maybe albacore. When did the tuna grounds happen? Because again, I wasn't privy to this until I took an 8-day boat last year, and then we made our way back up to the quote tuna grounds. So when did the tuna grounds become an official thing? And I'll hang up and listen.
So I'll answer the second question first. The tuna thing really shifted north in 2015, and it was part of the decadal oscillation, which is a fancy word that just says the currents shifted north. So the California current, California undercurrent, all shifted roughly 300 to 500 miles north. So that moved the intersection point of the bluefin tuna's migration farther to the north off of our coastline here and as far up as the Oregon border and farther. The other thing that happened was we came out of the El Nino warm water period into a cold water period, which in turn there was more upwelling, which then feeds the anchovy and the sardine population. So there was just a lot more food here for the fish. So after 2015 is when that really changed and shifted north. I think we caught the first 100-pound tuna at Catalina that was weighed there in June of 2015. That was a 136-pounder that we caught on our boat during a sea bass tournament, actually.
Wow,
that's cool.
And had a tank of squid and found all these fish off the East End. Anyway, as far as the sea bass question goes, I think the sea bass population is doing well. I think there's fish out there to be had. I know I did a collection trip with a good friend and AFCO employee Dave Elm on his boat back in June, and with Bill Shedd, and we were able to collect 10 adult white sea bass just fishing during the day that we put in the pen over at Catalina Island, the white sea bass brood pen. This is a brood stock fish that we're going to bring back to the Hubs Hatchery down here in San Diego. So from everything I learned, and there was actually one of the scientists from Hubs was on board while we were collecting, they seem to think that the sea bass population's in pretty good shape. And as far as the recreational fishery goes, I mean, you know how sea bass are. You can't just say, I'm going to go catch a sea bass in October and go get one. But during the prime time, which seems to be shifting later every year, but in that roughly May to July period of time, yeah, I think there's a lot of good sea bass fishing to be had. But they're never going to be a super easy fish to catch.
Sure. But now, I mean, there's a bulk of squid around. There's a lot of squid at Catalina, Clemente, the Channel Islands, and such like that. And that bodes well for the spring, too. You know,
it does.
A lot of bait, a lot of fish, right?
And you know, we lose track of it down here, but the fishing for sea bass in the Channel Islands this year was insane.
Was it?
For week after week after week. You had all the squid you wanted, all the sea bass you wanted, mostly schoolies on the flats up there. But and I fished them up there, and it's a whole different deal than it is at Catalina or Clemente.
That's great.
Yeah,
we had fun when we had Jade on here talking about how they were fishing them, you know, almost like tuna, where they're driving around and hitting them with sonar and fishing them almost like balls of yellowtail. They drive around, find a school, get over the top of it, catch a few.
Yeah,
I mean like tuna fishing. It was really
That was with Chauncey, right?
Yeah, huh?
Yeah. We had that at Santa Rosa Island on our boat last year, where the fish was all out in the sand flats, and we just meter around with the up and down and find them and throw a dipper of squid and catch your limit.
There you go.
Wow. That's fun.
Hey, when we come back, we got a lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way. Another full hour. You stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Long range fishing, nothing beats Shimano. Hi, this is Doug Kern from Fisherman's Landing Tackle, the saltwater tackle professionals. Come check out the Shimano Talica, the pinnacle of leather drag two-speed reels. The Talica features Shimano's Hagani body when throwing jigs. The Shimano Trinidad is your top choice with the extreme cranking power, and Shimano Super Free Spool provides extreme castability. You'll be able to put your Oahu zone for all your Shimano needs to the Fisherman's Landing Tackle in Ciego.
Sport Fishing, not just that anymore, it's to the Dana Ward's Club. Dana Ward Sport Fish invites all angler 12 to join Hits Club. Membership includes $1 of really cool stuff, like 2 free fishing trips, whale watch trip, as well as Dana Ward's Club hat. Log on to the website, notes.com. Visit them in Dana Harbor, back capital west, and it's from the freeway in County.
Long range fishermen know the Red 3 is the finest vessel technology to succeed and safe. This brim 5-foot sport fleet demand up while bringing audible fishing vacation. And crew are ex-friendly and desire to help you have the trip of a lifetime. Book a trip on the Red Rooster 3 and you'll be back. Trips go fast. So check RedRooster3.com or call Lee Palm Sport Fisheries at 619-224-3857.
If you get back to the launch ramp and need extra power to run your electric tool or charge a battery, which is San Diego County Ford dealer has the answer. The Ford F-150 truck now has available Pro Power on board to use your truck as a mobile generator. You will find this amazing feature on the Ford F-150 truck so useful in many different ways. What about powering a fridge or a freezer to get your fish home? Visit your San Diego County Ford dealer to learn more. They'll be glad to hook you up.
In America, the future belongs to everyone. So we built the vehicles of the future for everyone. Command the road with built Ford Tough trucks. Gear up and head out in a Ford SUV. Or check out Ford's adventurous new lineup like Bronco, Bronco Sport, and Maverick. Order your perfect truck or SUV built for you, by you. Or get big cash back, low APR, and exclusive lease offers at your local Ford stores, where the future is for everyone.
Here's John Ireland for Rancho Leonero.
Rancho Leonero is very family-oriented. People have brought their children down, and now they're bringing their children. It's not unusual to have 3 generations of family at the hotel. Grandpa, dad, and normally sons, sometimes daughters. The families come back year after year, and it's a safe place for the kids. It's small, it's intimate, right on the water, 2 miles of beachfront. The water's very shallow in front. There's no currents to speak of, no waves. We have child care, $10 a day for a babysitter. Security is high at Rancho Leonero. It's really unnecessary, but it adds up comfort level. And we really do encourage the families. It's a great place for family reunions, family get-togethers, weddings. We do it all. 1-800-646-2252. 646-BAHA. And RanchoLeonero.com. There's nowhere that I could think of to have the same atmosphere and the same experience that you get in Rancho Leonero. We love families.